Okay, so first, on behalf of organizers, again, I want to welcome everybody here. And today we have this kind of warm-up day. There are no terribly technical talks, and Edward and I will give you an overview of some of the subjects that we're planning to do in the next couple of weeks in more detail. And in fact, my talk in this vein is going to be more of a roadmap of what we'll do in the first and second week, with some hints for what could happen in the third week. So I'll mention lots of topics, and sometimes I'll point even to specific speakers out of the audience who'll be doing some of the talks. Edward already described in the first part this morning the big triangle, which involves geometric Langlands, four-dimensional gauge theory, and two-dimensional conformal field theory. So in this overview that I'm going to give you in this coming hour, I'll focus on the connection between two-dimensional conformal field theory. That will be one main player in our story. And on the other hand, four-dimensional gauge theory. And again, I'll throw in some statements and try to show you schematically where we want to go, so that in the following days, you have an idea of where we're standing, where we're heading, and to give a better perspective on some of the talks which may be slightly focused or technical, so you know where they fit in the bigger picture. So the goal of this overview is to give you a more holistic perspective, more holistic picture on where we'll be. And two-dimensional conformal field theory is a very old subject, of course. It involves lots of things that were studied in the beginning of, starting with the beginning of 80s, such as representations of vertex separator algebras, spaces of conformal blocks, integrable systems, and various lattice models. And so on. In fact, many of these topics have already been mentioned by Edward in his talk. Four-dimensional gauge theory, on the other hand, involves keywords or basic ingredients such as G, which is going to be compact gauge group, M4, I'll follow Edward's notation, will be a four-manifold, because here we're talking about four-dimensional gauge theory. And then one is studying properties of gauge connections on four-manifolds. So a typical thing that somebody working in this area would do is to study partial differential equations, PDEs, for gauge connection A, and example of such PDE is equation of the form FA plus equals to zero. So these are familiar instanton equations. And then one can study moduli space of such of solutions to such PDEs. In this case, it would be moduli space of instantons. So all gauge connections A, which satisfy equation FA plus equals zero moduli gauge. And this is a typical problem in gauge theory. One is studying, it's much closer to analysis in some sense, so one aims to understand solutions to very interesting nonlinear equations. And then there are various things one can do with this with such equations and moduli spaces. So one obvious thing one can do is to try to compute, for example, simple topological invariants of this moduli spaces. Good example is already based on what I defined here, is the following. Such moduli spaces of instantons are labeled by a second Chern class, C2. So let me denote with M instanton K, emphasizing that the value of the second Chern class is equal to K. And then one can simply consider, say, Euler characteristic of such moduli space. That's the simplest topological invariant. And as often happens, it's convenient to organize such numbers. Now they're just numbers, which correspond to choice of gauge group G and four manifold M into a generating series. So once we have sequence of numbers labeled by K, we can form a generating function, right? Q to the K times the characteristic of this space is n sum over K. So this generating function, or equivalently partition function, happens to be a nice object which now penetrates to the other side of the correspondence. Namely, it becomes a character of a two-dimensional conformal field theory. And this is, if you wish, a first example of a connection between four-dimensional gauge theory and two-dimensional conformal field theory. So this relation is discovered in mid-90s, is a precursor to the story that we are going to study. In order to understand this relation and more general connections between two-dimensional conformal field theory and four-dimensional gauge theory, it's convenient to start with a system which can see both two-dimensional physics and four-dimensional physics somehow in the same time. That would be obviously very useful, very convenient. And here comes another key player in this game. So there is a pretty mysterious, even by physics standards, six-dimensional theory. So since we have, we're aiming at a relation between two-dimensional conformal theory and four-dimensional gauge theory, 2 + 4 = 6. So one can start with a certain class of theories in six dimensions. And one of their properties, again, they'll be discussed in later lectures during this week and next week, but one of the properties is that they're labeled by G, which is a group of, Lie group of Cartan type An, Dn, or En, Ad, or E. And it's convenient to, so these six-dimensional theories are superconformal, meaning that they have a lot of symmetries. They have supersymmetry plus conformal invariants in six dimensions, but these are not gauge theories. So in that sense, they're quite mysterious. We know some things about these theories, but definitely not as much as we would like to. And convenient starting point is to take such six-dimensional supersymmetric conformal theory on a manifold, six-dimensional manifold of the form M4 cross C, where C is a Riemann surface, M4 is a four-manifold. And then one can consider two separate limits. One in which roughly speaking, volume of C goes to zero. And on this limit, we should obtain some effective four-dimensional pairing. On the four-manifold M. So this theory inherits the property of conformal invariants, so we obtain effective four-dimensional superconformal theory. And now this is a gauge theory. This is an interesting property that even if we start with some theory that we don't fully understand and it's very nonlinear and not even a gauge theory, via such reduction, we can obtain a theory which in suitable limits can in fact be composed of gauge group and familiar ingredients involving various Mettler multiplets. So important point here is that now this is a gauge theory. And if you take an opposite limit starting with M4 times C and take volume of the four manifold to zero, assume that this part of the space is very small, then effective description will be in terms of two-dimensional physics on C. So therefore, we get some 2D conformal field theory on C. So this is the general link or idea that will link four-dimensional physics and two-dimensional physics. In fact, using such construction, one can understand the statement about the characters and instanton counting that I just made, plus many other interesting ingredients and relations between two-dimensional field theory, conformal field theory, and four-dimensional gauge physics. In both cases, the choice of geometry, which we assume is small or hidden, determines what kind of effective theory we get on the remaining part of the geometry. For example, here, the Lagrangian and choices of gauge group and various matter content, what kind of gauge theory we obtain on the four manifold, is determined by the choice of Riemann surface C, which is assumed to be small on this limit. And here, what kind of two-dimensional conformal field theory we obtain on C is conversely determined by the choice of four-manifold M4. Okay. A prominent example of this, again, appeared about 15 years ago or even let's say 15 years ago, during the time of the second superstring revolution, where many people, fathers of string theory, including those in the audience, considered M4 equal K3 surface. So in this case, what one finds is this effective two-dimensional CFT is the same as conformal field theory on the wall sheet of the so-called heterotic stream. In particular, the lattice gamma, which is H2 of the four-manifold with integer coefficients, plays a prominent role in, I'll write it as cohomology, in dimension four. Mid-dimensional cohomology can be, of course, self-dual or anti-self-dual, yes? Right, exactly, for in the most basic case. So this, in four dimensions, mid-dimensional cohomology split into self-dual, anti-self-dual part, which one can denote as gamma plus and gamma minus, and these become natural lattices which describe left-moving and right-moving degrees of freedom of the two-dimensional conformal field theory. So for example, 4K3 signature of the four manifold is non-zero. Therefore, left-moving and right-moving factors of this conformal field theory are not entirely symmetric. There is no symmetry. And that's the origin of the name heteroic, meaning or related to the appearance of heteroic string here, which has different left movers and right movers. And in particular, one can see, say, two copies of eight lattices in this decomposition. So this is for, as Anton is correctly pointing out, this is for basic single theory corresponding roughly to the U1 case. So G is U1 in this. It's much, much better understood than in the non-abelian case that it has a Lagrangian description which from which not all of the symmetries of the theory are manifest. So only one can choose different frames, and if one is willing to give up some of the symmetries, then one can write down a Lagrangian. Okay, any other questions? So of this suggestion or generalization from here is to consider other choices of four manifolds, and another example. So if this is example number one, then example number two, which I'll put on this blackboard, is in some sense the most natural or the simplest choice. We can take four manifold to be four sphere, which unlike K3 lacks any non-trivial topology. This should be in some sense simpler. And in this case, we have to jump by 15 years to this developments in the recent year, mainly by Alday, Gayota, and Tachikawa, who suggested that in this case, the corresponding theory should be alluvial theory. Or its close cousin. In this case, one can consider, in fact, all of the versions of A, D, or E. The one which is most studied is A1 case corresponding to SU2. Right. Louisville would show for A1, but then there are various cousins, so-called TODA CFTs, corresponding to AN, and one can consider even further generalizations involving D or E types, but they have been studied much less. Yeah, there are also TODAs. Right, TODA is defined for G, so this G will naturally be inherited from the original six-dimensional theory. But the point I'm trying to emphasize is that, in some sense, one is taking different choices of the four manifold and obtains different choices of conformal field theory determined by, in two dimensions, determined by original choice of G plus the choice of the four manifold. Closely related to this example, so now I can erase. My example one is example two prime, where instead of S4, one can take a four manifold, which is what we call usually R4, epsilon one, epsilon two. So this is usual R4. Equipped with the action of a circle group. In fact, two of them, SO2 cross SO2, labeled 1 and 2, which are part of the rotation symmetry of R4. So one can split R4, visualize it as a union, as two planes, product of two planes, and each SO2 corresponds to rotation in each of the two planes. By doing so, by choosing non-trivial action of SO21 and SO22 on R4, all interesting quantities, whatever we wish to study in this theory, will be forced to sit at the fixed points, and in this case, the only fixed point is the origin of R4. So even though original R4 looks very non-compact, this is cartoon for it, all interesting physics will be localized near the origin where these groups act by rotating corresponding planes. And in a sense, even with respect to this rotation symmetry, this choice of M4 is also compact, nice compact manifold, just like K3 or four sphere. So one can consider the six-dimensional theory on this choice of R4, and what it becomes is essentially a close cousin of the previous example. That's why I label it by 2 prime. So in both of these cases, you get Liouville theory, Tauda theory of the suitable type, but related to, in the case of example 2 prime, you get roughly holomorphic half of the conformal field theory, so you get conformal blocks. And in this case, you get correlation functions or partition functions. Now, to those of you who are not familiar with the subjects and this correspondence, yes? Right, you modify the theory in a certain way. So explaining, in fact, answering this question is going to be precisely the subject of one of the introductory lectures. So during this week, we'll have several talks which will familiarize ourselves with certain ingredients I'm explaining. So this is a good time, perhaps, to slow down and say that this is going to be exactly one of these topics. And the key word here is omega background. This is what this word equipped means. You're actually, you can say, deforming a theory or equivalently looking at suitable observables or questions, which are in some sense equivariant, and making it more precise is going to be subject of Vasily's talk, who kindly agreed to give us an introduction into what omega backgrounds and all these questions are. So as a result, one can obtain, starting with the data of four-dimensional gauge theory, in some sense, the action of rotation group and so on, produce suitable partition functions, which then can be interpreted or compared to something on the CFT side. Right, right. It acts on the fields, therefore on the observables, but in the process, one has to formulate correct questions, and that, again, will be the goal of one of the introductory talks later this week. Another set of introductory lectures will be next week, and we'll have introduction to the Liouville theory which concerns the other side of the correspondence. So in this dictionary, which relates two-dimensional conformal field theory and four-dimensional physics, we'll need to fill some gaps or to make sure that everybody's on the same page, give a sufficient introduction to both subjects. And next week, Jörg Teschner will give us two introductory lectures and to legal theory, just focusing on the topic of a two-dimensional CFT without aiming to explain the connection, more or less with the old-fashioned canonical 2D CFT point of view. And in turn, the connection, including this one, will be discussed in lectures of Yuji Tachikawa, who will tell us more about the link between this. So, yes? Yes, that's correct. So there are two versions of AGT. One is version which I call in my example 2, and another is 2 prime. So both are AGT. But in some sense, AGT, which will be again described in lectures of Yuji Tachikawa, also next week, will be not one of the first points in our journey, because it already requires, in some sense, some familiarity with both two-dimensional conformal field theory, which again will be described by Jorn, and four-dimensional gauge theory and all the ingredients. So that's why we'll spend a fair amount of time, in fact, most of this week, putting emphasis on all the required ingredients, on all the prerequisites, one of which will be omega background, to make sure that we can enter second week, and again, then we'll talk about AGT connection in more detail. So, are there any questions, any further questions at this point? So, some of the required material to press. Yes? Right, so I'm about to make a few comments about the other arrow. The other error is also not terribly new, especially to physicists, and will be precisely the subject of one other introductory talk by Dave tomorrow, who'll tell us a little bit about this error going from 6 dimensions to 4 dimensions. And as I say, this four-dimensional theory inherits the property from 6 dimensions, important property that it's invariant with respect to conformal symmetry and part of the supersymmetry. So in fact, what one finds is n equals 2 superconformal theory. In 4 dimensions, such that what kind of theory we deal with is determined by the choice of Riemann surface C. So exactly this problem was studied in string theory literature about 10 years ago, shortly after ADS-CFT correspondence, when people tried to construct examples of superconformal field theories and study their gravitational duals. That's yet another duality which I don't want to distract you with, but for not unrelated reasons, exactly this question, the kind of question that we want to discuss, was studied by Maldacena and Nunes and other people, including, say, Jerome Gauntlet and his collaborators. So there are quite a few groups who worked on this subject. And Dave will give us an introduction into kind of questions that people were trying to ask at that time about this class of superconformal field theories, but obtained by compactifying six-dimensional theory on a Riemann surface C. So this is yet another intro talk. And finally, the third introductory talk that we'll have this week number one is about omega backgrounds. So that also, remember, concerns four-dimensional gauge theory. So the order is slightly, it's first, second, and third in this outline, but the order will be slightly different. So all of these three talks have to do with this corner of the correspondence. So in fact, this week, the first week of the workshop, we'll focus more attention on the four-dimensional physics. And as I say, Jörg Teschner will tell us more about definition of Liouville theory, basic questions in from the conformal field theory perspective next week. But this will have three introductory talks on omega backgrounds, which is important in defining gauge theory part of this correspondence. Certain aspects, including superconformal invariants, and this huge symmetry plays an important role in classification and study of such theories and determining their properties. And there is yet another important ingredient in the four-dimensional story that we need to understand, and it has to do with the duality group. Just like the theory itself is determined by the choice of Riemann surface C, the duality group, which is a group of symmetries, but including non-perturbative interesting symmetries, is also determined by C. By the choice of Riemann surface C. And this was discovered fairly recently, starting about 2 years ago with the work of Orgeris and Seiberg, and then we roughly speaking understood what happens in the case of flow genus. For mathematicians, this could be viewed as a simple special case. And then Gaiota and other people generalized the corresponding statement, which again will be explained more fully in this introductory talk three, for Riemann surfaces of higher genus. So we'll have these three intro talks on gauge theory. Yuji Tachikawa will give this talk. So it will be Vasily's talk on omega backgrounds, then Dave will talk about these aspects, including Maldacena-Nunez solution, and Yuji will tell us about the symmetries and their geometric interpretation in terms of Riemann surface. Any other questions? Right, so as Edward explained in his, or at least alluded to in his lecture this morning, we have a relation between two-dimensional conformal field theory, geometric Langlands, and four-dimensional gauge theory. Moreover, so one great advantage of this approach, and it's hard to say why it's so effective, is especially for mathematicians or people not familiar with the audience, I want to emphasize again this six-dimensional point of view that many of the links and concrete statements that can be checked at the level of formulas and so on, which are very concrete and can be proven even by mathematical standards, follow from something fairly mysterious, which is at the top of the board, that we don't fully understand. So in some sense, this correspondence defines or describes, and depending on how one looks at this, of this six-dimensional theory in a very specific background, in very special circumstances, where six-dimensional space-time is of the form four-manifold cross C. Now, I want to make a couple of comments on how this is connected to geometric Langlands and point of view on geometric Langlands from the 4D gauge theory, a la Kapustin and Witten. And so, and I put a slash here because if we already accept that geometric Langlands can be interpreted as S-duality or mirror symmetry in the context of n equals 4 superanneals, then you could ask equivalently, what is the relation of the story I just explained to n equals 4 superanneals in four dimensions which in that case had to be considered on a very special four-manifold, and in order not to confuse it with M4 in this talk, I'll write it as sigma cross C, as Edward explained in his lecture, or maybe we saw briefly, geometric Langlands can be understood as baby version of the story where the starting point is a four-dimensional theory, and there are different ways to do this reduction, in particular on the Riemann surface C, which is the same as in this outline. And it turns out that in order to make the connection with two-dimensional conformal field theory and what I'm describing here, one should consider it is. It is. Yeah. So this C is the same C.
But M4 here.
Right. M4 is different. That's why I prefer not to write M4 for this guy in order to avoid confusion. But C is the same. So C is the same. And in order to understand this relation, it's convenient, or between now three corners that you introduced in your talk, it's convenient to start in six dimensions. With this mysterious six-dimensional theory and consider it on a six-dimensional manifold of a rather special type. So one can put it on R2 cross C cross two-dimensional torus. That's one useful starting point. And in fact, just like we did in our previous examples to make things nice and neat, let's kind of compactify this R2 in the same way we compactified R4 by promoting it to, so to say, equivariant background, again also called omega background, whose definition we'll see in a couple of days. So then we have a six-dimensional theory on this product, and depending on how we do our compactification or dimensional reduction, we'll obtain slightly different systems. For example, if we first compactify or dimensionally reduce on a torus, it's known that six-dimensional theory reduces to n equals 4 superanneals. So in this way, we immediately land in the setup of the gauge theory realization of geometric Langlands of Kapustin and Witten and its generalization. On the other hand, we can first reduce on C. Yes. Right, so as you said in your talk, we'll have to shake the story a little bit. So we have to allow ourselves to go a little bit outside of the box painted by Kapustin and Witten and ask slightly different questions. So you're right, the role of sigma will be played by R2 epsilon. And in that case, if we first reduce on T2, we obtain n equals 4 superanneals. Exactly. So the geometric complex structure parameter of the elliptic curve will become the coupling constant of the n equals 4 superring mills. And typical questions that we want to ask can be formulated in terms of n equals 4 superring mills, or even translated to geometric Langlands program. But then one can also start with a six-dimensional theory and use this conformal invariance, which allows us to play with volumes separately, and first assume that C is very small, so we first reduce or compactify on C, and that's exactly what we did over there. So we end up with rephrasing this setup in terms which belong to the left-hand side of the. Right. In this case, our M4 will be R2 epsilon cross T2. Absolutely. Yes. So in this way, this particular background, which was explained in work of Nekrasov and Witten, and I'll give another survey talk on this sometime later during the conference, provides a link, if you wish, between two-dimensional conformal field theory, in fact, the one we want to study, of alluvial type or its close cousins, and n equals 4 superring mills and geometric Langlands on the other hand. So we'll be able to complete this triangle involving, again, two-dimensional conformal field theory, four-dimensional gauge theory, and geometric representation theory and geometric Langlands.
What was the advantage of T2 versus the R2S1?
They play completely different roles. So T2 is the usual, is if you... Right, you're going to get something else, and good. So let's we'll consider actually this will be also this is also discussed in Nekrasov-Witten, and we'll talk about that too. In fact, to make full contact with Liouville, it's actually better to consider indeed R4 epsilon 1 epsilon 2 cross C, which was exactly the one of the original examples that, that I mentioned earlier. But in order to understand this case, we first have to work through slightly easier situation, which will have more natural connection with n equals 4 and so on, and then we'll be able to understand this case. So what I'm trying to say is, doing this example first, we'll do all the necessary work so that in the simple generalization, which will take about 5-10 minutes, we can easily accomplish the second one. So the second rotation will come as a bonus or for free once we understand just one. The first one, well, they're somewhat different indeed, because here you have T2 and epsilon 2. There is a relation. And again, it's best to wait till we discuss that in detail. I definitely don't have time to do it in this survey talk. But all I can say is that there are close cousins, and I think pedagogically it's best to start with just one rotation, when all the connections will be more manifest, and then we'll have the second one as a variant of it, in some sense. It will become clear why. So. Okay, I guess, I said all the essential key points I wanted to say. Basically, again, my goal was to outline the roadmap and give you a short preview of some of the talks. I barely could mention their titles. So if you have any questions, please go ahead and ask. Yes.
So, we would like to establish a connection between theory A and theory B. What you seem to be saying is that there is a theory C such that we can get A and B by doing something.
Yeah, so in some cases we'll be talking about topological twists, and topological means theory will be independent of the metric, therefore it allows us to play with the limits and take, for example, limit where metric on M4 is such that M4 has zero volume and so on and so forth. Absolutely. So there will be a statement that theory A is equivalent to theory B, and in turn is equivalent to some topological version of theory C. But luckily, some of the questions, in fact, about 80% of what we're going to discuss, will extend even beyond the topological limit. So because of the superconformal invariance, which again is a very important ingredient, which will be explained in further talks, starting with Dave tomorrow and continuing further, that allows to ask some certain class of questions and establish equivalence even before we go to topological sector once we talk about physical theories. So that's very important, at least for physicists. No. I mean untwisted, without the twist. I mean real physical quantities. And in order to establish equivalence, again, it requires maybe a little qualifier. Equivalence means that one can establish a dictionary and compare certain quantities. So as I explained in some of the illustrative examples, a partition function or suitable partition function of a four-dimensional theory can be a character, conformal block, or correlation function on a two-dimensional CFT. Likewise, this mysterious six-dimensional theory has two-dimensional surface separators in it. So it has a nice class of objects which are two-dimensional. So that's what I call surface separators. And therefore, one can consider what happens if one, in either this reduction or this reduction, takes a surface separator here or some other objects. Again, surface separator is more or less all we understand in this case, and wrap them on either cycle in the Riemann surface C, then we obtain a line operator in the four-dimensional theory, or we can choose surface operator to see it, for example, at a point on the Riemann surface C, and then we obtain a surface operator in four dimensions. So it will give us a tool to play with this correspondence, and in this last example I mentioned, establish correspondence between local insertions or points on the Riemann surface and surface operators in four dimensions. So there'll be a dictionary. Correspondingly, line operator here will turn into line operator here if you distribute two dimensions of a surface operator democratically between these two factors. So there'll be a long list of questions, including functions such as correlation functions, partition functions, plus various animals that live in the zoo, such as surface operators, lines operators, boundary conditions that we can compare, indeed brains, and sometimes it will happen that operator of one kind here will translate in an operator of a completely different kind here, and this will be interesting background to play with, yes. As I say, surprisingly very little. So superconformal invariants all six dimensions, some of its simple consequences. Of each simple consequence, I mean consequences of superconformal invariants. In particular, supersymmetries and what kind of BPS objects live there. So all of the statements we know, of course, from string theory construction of the six-dimensional theory. And indeed, at least to me, it's a little surprising that this such little starting input in six dimensions, we managed to land it and formulate very precise questions about this connection. Well, as I say, yeah, supersymmetry, superconformal invariants plus statements about BPS objects. But all of them are more or less part of the same package.
Where do the statements come from?
Right, and there are several ways to arrive to those statements, which in string theory form consistent network of conjectures, if you wish. So there are many different ways to arrive to this six-dimensional theory, starting with different systems and string theory. So, and they're all mutually consistent. So even though each one is conjectural, they're all related. I don't think we'll discuss those starting points. Well, Dave will have to use some of them in his talk probably, but I don't think we'll question or we'll discuss too much the origin of the six-dimensional theory. In some sense, I want to mention it because it should be on the back of our mind, and it's useful in interpreting these connections. And especially to mathematicians, I want to point out where some of these links will come from, because again, most of the time we'll be focused on very specific questions. And once we are bogged down on details, I want everybody to have a slightly bigger picture of where we are and where we're going to. Absolutely. So yes, as we said before, right, we'll have equivalence between A and B via C. So in fact, all of the corners, we could say that we can use this relation to essentially define what C is or understand what properties of this theory C.
So at the beginning, you gave a beautiful example when you were doing something four-dimensional, something two-dimensional, where four-dimensional you would calculate the relative to
Well, it fits extremely well, and well, in this case, the six-dimensional theory is on M4 cross T2, so that's a special example, and then you'll be asking close cousins, or some of the questions that we'll be asking about the context of N equals 2 gauge theory. And no, it actually depends, as I say, it depends on the choice of M4. So we start with M4 cross C, and depending on which way we compactify, we obtain different theory determined by the part which is not visible. So for example, if you want to ask what kind of conformal field theory you obtain in that context I mentioned, it's determined by the choice of a four manifold. Yeah, N equal 4 definitely appears in one compactification where you reduce on a two torus. So in that case, you obtain N equals 4 theory on a four manifold, and you have to twist it in a certain way to preserve at least part of the supersymmetry. Which conformal field theory you obtain by different choices of M4 is a little trickier. So first of all, you obtain a character, which is just a building block. It doesn't really say necessarily in which theory. Besides, it depends, of course, on the choice of the central charge, and you can obtain a certain specific character. But which four manifolds you have to choose in order to obtain WCW model, I don't remember off the top of my head. I think you have to take a Lie space to be precise. So, for instance, if you take CP2, you would get slightly non-conventional. Yeah. Yes. If I recall correctly, yes. Yes, right. So this will be a special case. The kind of questions that we'll be asking are somewhat similar, but not exactly the same as in that example. So instead of taking other characteristics of the moduli space, we'll also be doing something with the moduli space of instantons, something that Vasily will explain to us in a couple of days, which is kind of reminiscent of taking other characteristic, but is a little more refined, if you wish. Well, you could, but in some sense, early characteristic is the simplest choice, yes.